Chapter 2, The Path That Will Lead You to God. Sundar Singh squinted against his son, the bright sunlight, as he followed his mother across a dusty Punjab plain. Despite the grit in his eyes and the sun beating down on his turban-covered head, Sundar felt like bursting into song. Today, September 3rd, 1896, was his 7th birthday. Even better than that, it was the day his mother declared him ready to recite the Bhagavad-Gita to the holy man, whom they had visited together for as long as Sundar could remember. As he walked, Sundar thought of his older brothers, who had laughed at him as he and his mother had left their house in Rampur village to visit the holy man. "Ha," they said to him, "too much religion will make that little head of yours pop. How are all those words going to help you become a banker, a lawyer?" His mother had raised her hand to them. "Stop now," she said. "Every one of you has his own path to walk, and Sundar has his too. Only God can tell what he is preparing for Sundar for." As Sundar thought of his mother's words, he loved her even more for saying them. She was known as one of the holiest women in the religion, a Bhakat, or saint, some people called her. Although Sundar's father, Shar Singh, was not particularly interested in religious matters, Sundar knew that he too was proud of his mother and her gentle ways. Although the family was Sikh, his mother often said, "God speaks in many ways and through many faiths." As a result, she encouraged Sundar to understand the good in all religions. That is why, on this particularly hot summer September afternoon, Sundar and his mother were on their way to visit the holy man, or Sadhu, as holy men were called, to recite to him not the Sikh scriptures, but Hindu scripture. Most 7-year-old boys lived in India in 1896 had not yet learned much about their faith, but Sundar was an exception. He spent hours listening to various religious teachers in the Sikh temples. In addition to memorizing the entire Bhagavad Gita, he knew large tracts of the Sikh scriptures, the Granth Sahib. He also knew that Guru Nanak had started the Sikh religion in 1496. The Guru had been born in a simple Hindu family and worked among Muslims. And by the time he was 27 years old, he had started a religion. He worshipped one eternal God and rejected the Hindu caste system, insisting instead that, in God's eyes, men and women, rich and poor, were all alike. Now, 400 years later, the Sikh religion was thriving in North India, and its followers still believed that there was one benevolent God. Sundar and his mother followed a winding path that led them to the edge of a forest. There, sitting in the shade of a tree, was a sadhu, clad in a yellow robe. The sadhu welcomed the two of them warmly, and then proceeded to ask Sundar some questions. As Sundar answered, the sadhu's eyes lit up. And finally, he said, "Now you must recite the Bhagavad Gita for me." The holy man sat cross-legged on the ground, his back straight as he waited for Sundar to begin. Sundar cleared his throat and began to recite the Hindu text in Sanskrit. At first, he was nervous, and the words tumbled from his mouth in a halting, high-pitched voice. But as his nervousness subsided, his words started to flow with confidence. Sundar got so caught up in the recitation that he was not sure how long he had been speaking when the holy man finally raised his hand. "You may stop now. You have done well," he said. With that, Sundar stood tall and thrust out his chest. Then the sadhu spoke again. "You have recited well, yes, but you are proud at having done so. Pride is the enemy. You must learn humility as well as the Bhagavad Gita. Humility is the path that will lead you to God." Sundar knew that the holy man was right. Pride was exactly what he was feeling. He was proud at having recited the Bhagavad Gita so well. As he thought about the sadhu's words, his shoulders slumped and he diverted his eyes to the dusty ground. "What does the Bhagavad Gita say is the way to please God?" the sadhu asked. "It tells us the way to pleasing God is by keeping all the laws that he has handed down to us by our forefathers." "And?" the sadhu questioned further. "It also tells us that to please God, we must practice the way of meditation and self-denial. Then we must cut ourselves off from the ideas of men and think only on the things of God," Sundar said. "You have spoken correctly," the holy man said with a look of satisfaction. Then he added, "If you do these things, the day may come when you, too, can call yourself a sadhu. Now it is time for you to go, but do not forget that what we have spoken of." "I will not," Sundar replied as he and his mother turned and set out for home. That night and for many nights afterwards, Sundar thought about what the sadhu had told him. He wondered about how he might become holy. He read the Sikh scriptures for hours at a time until his father complained that too much reading and religious thinking was bad for his health. Despite his father's objection, Sundar could feel something tugging at his heart. He wanted to find the way to God. He determined the part of finding his way to God would be to do good whenever the opportunity arose. One day, not too long afterwards, Sundar's father gave him a rupee to spend on whatever he liked at the local bazaar. Sundar took the money and ran off, trying to decide which of his favorite sweets he would buy. At the edge of the bazaar, Sundar saw a beggar woman. She was skin and bone, her hair was matted, her dark eyes were glazed over and sunken, and she was shivering uncontrollably. Sundar had seen her before, but he had never stopped to really look at her. Suddenly, he remembered his decision to do good wherever he could. Here was a woman who desperately needed help, and he could help her. He slipped his hand into his pocket and pulled out the rupee his father had given him. He could do nothing without. He could do without the sweets. "Here, take this," Sundar said, handing the woman the rupee. Tears formed at the edges of the woman's sunken eyes as she reached down and took the coin and thanked Sundar for it. A warm feeling of satisfaction swept through Sundar at his kind deed. But was there more he could do? Yes, there was. Sundar turned and ran back to the family compound. "Father, father," he called as he ran in the gate. Sundar found his father inside, sitting at a table, making entries in a ledger. "Father, I need 10 rupees, he began breathlessly. "There is a beggar woman at the bazaar. She is very sick and needs our help. I gave her my rupee, but it's not nearly enough. With 10 rupees, she can buy food and a blanket to keep warm." Shar Singh put down his pen and looked directly at his son. "Sundar, I cannot give you 10 rupees. First, this is a lot of money, but if I give you the money to this woman, every sick beggar and ramper in the surrounding area will be coming to our gate, expecting the same treatment. No, that will not do. I will not give you the money. You have done what you can. Now let someone else take care of her." "But," Sundar began. His father raised his hand to stop him. "Enough, Sundar. I have spoken." As his father picked up the pen and it began making entries to the ledger, Sundar turned and left the room. And that was when he saw it. Right there on the sideboard in the living room was his father's money pouch. At first, Sundar tried not to think about it, but an idea formed in his head, and he would not let it go. No, he told himself. He could not steal money from his father's money pouch. But then a picture of the beggar woman flashed through his mind. She needed his help. Before he knew it, Sundar had picked up the money pouch and slid a 10-rupee note from him. "Father will never notice that it is missing," he reassured himself. Sundar ran all the way back to the bazaar. He was out of breath when he spotted the frail form of the beggar woman. He stopped short, thinking about what he had to do. Suddenly, he was confused. How could he steal from his father? Surely that was one wrong would undo all the good he was trying to do for the beggar woman. If he followed through with this action, he might find himself farther away from God, not closer to him. Despite desperately wanting to help the beggar woman some more, Sundar turned around and began winding his way through the streets toward home. Less than an hour had passed since he had taken the money. Too little time, he reasoned, for anyone to notice that the money was gone. He would just slip the 10-rupee note back into his father's pouch, and no one would ever know what he had done. Sundar was surprised when he walked through the gate into the family compound. His father was storming back and forth in the yard. "Ah, there you are. Some money is missing from my pouch. 10 rupees, to be exact. Do you know anything about it, Sundar?" Sundar wanted to say yes and hand over the banknote, but he could not. He could see the anger in his father's eyes, and he feared the punishment that would be meted out to him. Then Sundar heard himself say, "No, I know nothing of the missing money." "Then it must be one of the servants," Sundar's father said in a determined voice. "I will get to the bottom of this. We cannot tolerate a thief in the house." Hardly able to comprehend the situation he had gotten himself into, Sundar turned and left the compound. This time he went to the woods on the outskirts of the village to think and be alone. What a mess he had made of things. All he wanted to do was help the beggar woman at the bazaar, but now he was nothing but a liar and a thief. The sun was beginning to set when Sundar finally began making his way home. When he arrived, he learned that his father had the house servants beaten as a punishment for stealing money from him. Sundar's mother explained that since none of the servants would own up to the crime, Shar Singh was left with no other option but to punish them all. Sundar was horrified at where his actions had led. That night, Sundar could neither eat nor sleep. As he tossed and turned on his sleeping mat, his conscience gnawed at him. How could he ever look at his father in the eye again, or the servants, knowing that he had endured the punishment that should have been his? Finally, Sundar could stand it no longer. Even though it was midnight, he had to set the matter straight. He stumbled to his feet and went to wake his father. Sundar trembled as he shook his father awake. Shar Singh looked surprised and then shocked as Sundar handed him 10-note rupee and confessed what he had done. When he had finished his confession, Sundar stood tensely waiting for the beating he knew would follow. But to his surprise, instead of telling Sundar to get the whip, his father reached up and put his arm around him. Sundar, I have always trusted you, and your confession convinces me that I was not wrong in that trust. Now run along to bed, and we will talk about more of this in the morning. The following morning, when Sundar woke, his father was waiting for him, the money pouch in his hand. Shar Singh pulled the 10-rupee note from it and handed it to Sundar. Take this and buy the beggar woman some food and a blanket, he said, and then he pulled out a 1-rupee coin. And here, take this and buy yourself some sweets while you're at the bazaar. Thank you, father, thank you, Sundar said, taking the money, scarcely able to comprehend his father's kindness. He quickly dressed and headed for the bazaar. Soon after this incident, Sundar began attending the American Presbyterian Mission School near his home. Most of the other boys in Rampur were forbidden from attending a Christian school, and they would not have wanted to anyway. Sikhs were taught to despise Christians because Christians believed that God had come down and taken on the form of a man. But Sundar's mother was different. She had made friends with 2 of the former female missionaries and decided to enroll her youngest son in their school. Sundar was happy to attend the school. Indeed, he enjoyed it greatly until he was 14 and a terrible thing happened. His mother died. Sundar was devastated. All of his religious acts, his praying, visiting the temple and the sadhu, reciting the Bhagavad Gita, even learning about God from his Christian Bible, had been encouraged by his mother. And now, unexplainably, she was gone. Sundar's mother had also taught him about the Hindu belief in reincarnation, how each soul is destined to pass through an almost endless cycle of death and rebirth until finally it attains the merit needed to once and for all pass from this world. Sundar had accepted his mother's words, but now he found no comfort whatsoever in reincarnation. The thought that her soul might be reborn as someone else whom he would not recognize sadden and distressed him. The missionary tried to comfort Sundar with words from the Bible, but he spat the words back in their faces. He thought bitterly about the fool he had been for hoping in God and trying to find and serve him. His heart grew hard, and within a month of his mother's dying, he was impossible for the Christian teachers to control. He argued with him at every turn, using his quick mind to refute anything that said in the Bible. He quoted long passages from the Hindu, Sikh, and Buddhist scriptures to back up his points. Finally, Sundar announced to his father that he would not be going to the mission school. He would rather walk 3 miles each way to this public school. His father let him go, and Sundar did everything he could to purge the Christian teaching from his mind. On his own, he found this more difficult to do than he had anticipated, so he gathered together a group of young hooligans to harass the Christians in the village. Sundar's hatred for Christians grew, and he vowed not to rest until the Christians were driven from the village. Sundar's father tried to reason with him, but Sundar would not listen. Now that his mother was dead, he did not care what anyone thought of him. Finally, summer arrived, and with it the relentless heat of the plains. Sundar soon found it more and more difficult to walk the 6 miles to school and back. He realized why one morning when he could not get up from his sleeping mat. Despite the summer heat, his entire body shook, and he felt very cold. He had caught malaria.